Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.
Hi, I'm David Manti, and welcome to a new episode of the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. With me this week is Carl Joachim, Chief Marketing Officer with EPAC. Thank you very much for joining me today, Carl.
Well, nice to be with you, David.
Excellent. Well, before we get started, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. Make sure to subscribe to our daily newsletter so you get it delivered to your inbox first. Carl, I always like to start with a little bit of background about the people I talk to. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself? Do you have any personal connection to cannabis, and how did you guys get involved in the industry?
No, I don't have any personal connection to it. The way we got involved in it really was after we started EPAC Flexible Packaging. It was a company that we based it on, that was based on digital printing. And with digital printing, we were aligned more with small, medium-sized runs. Our second plant, we started the company in 2016 in Madison, Wisconsin, but our second plant went into Boulder. And when we went into Boulder, obviously, we walked into quite a mature cannabis market, at least from our point of view, it was. We set about understanding those requirements for packaging in the cannabis industry, began to tailor some of our products to it. And since then, really, our position in cannabis has really been growing year over year.
What were some of those things that you learned about cannabis packaging that was unique to the industry that you hadn't seen in others?
Well, a couple things. I think the first thing was we ran across the requirement for resealable, child-resistant packaging. And so that tested us on a couple of fronts. So we needed to make sure that we were using the proper materials and that we had the proper zipper structure and that we had gone through the certifications that were necessary in order to be certified as child-resistant. So that was one of the things that we ran into. Another thing was just the state requirements around language on a package.
Okay. Did you know going into Boulder that cannabis might be an opportunity for you? Or was it something that after you opened the plants, the work kind of came to you?
No, we actually, we understood what the market was, both on the retail and the medicinal side. Before going in, it was one of the criteria that we used when we set up Boulder. It quite honestly, the pre-opening sales that was done in the area generated an awful lot of interest among the cannabis community there. And when we opened the plant, which I believe was in December of 2016 or 17 in Boulder, we actually had quite a strong pipeline. So it was definitely something that we thought about before we opened EPAC Boulder.
How has digital printing changed the industry and enabled some of these smaller companies in the cannabis industry to have a higher quality packaging than they experienced previously?
Well, what we've done with digital printing is really disrupt the flexible packaging market. The flexible packaging market is decades old, as you know, and they've grown up to be, cater to the large brands, super long runs, longer lead times have been accepted, that kind of thing. When we came on to the scene, we were able to turn packaging around in 10 to 15 business days. We were able to do multiple SKUs all at once. We didn't have any plate fees. We had very, very much less waste. We allowed our customers to order to demand as opposed to order and store inventory. So there were a whole lot of things that appealed not just to the cannabis customers, but really to anybody in the snack food or anybody that uses a pouch. But specifically, I think with cannabis, you come across so many new players, and now we're seeing players consolidate. But at the end of the day, there's a real need to be able to change on the fly, not have to wait months for your new packaging to come in. And nowadays, people are more aware of the environmental impact than ever before. And so with our platform, with the digital platform, it is more environmentally friendly in terms of it being carbon neutral and using fewer natural resources, water, electricity, and so forth. So the platform is inherently more eco-friendly than traditional printing technologies. But maybe even more importantly is because our customers can order to demand. They're not storing large stockpiles of bags that they're never going to use and probably end up throwing away 25% of them, which end up in a landfill, which end up, as you know, contributing to the problem that we have with plastics in the workplace. So there's a lot of reasons why I think our message resonates with the cannabis industry.
You had mentioned that was your differentiator when you started out. Are you still looking at a lead time of about 10 to 15 days with people printing on demand?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In many cases we do it faster, but okay. You know, that's basically what we shoot for.
Do you only do printing services or do you do graphic design services as well?
Great question. We are what we would call a full service packaging supplier in the sense that we do our own printing, we do our own laminating, we do our own pouch making. We are in the midst right now, and I hope we get this done by the end of the year, of rolling out a design services offering as part of EPAC. What we find, what we see, are these small and medium-sized brands. They have an idea about what their design should look like, what their logo should look like, and they just need some help getting it to perhaps be more professional, perhaps, you know, make better use of fonts and colors and things of that nature. So we believe, I personally believe very strongly that I think our small, medium-sized customer base, you know, customers that aren't going to go hire a professional designer for everything that they want to do, I believe it'll be a super value add for us and for our customers.
Do you know, having worked in the industry for a while, do you know who some of the customers are that you might reach out to first once you launch that service?
I'd have to think about it. We have so many packaging customers right now. It'd be a long list and it wouldn't be hard to reach back out to them.
No, I just mean in terms of like, are there some packages that come to mind where you're like, okay, that was done by somebody's cousin and might need a little love and affection.
Well, we see that all the time. We see packages that are designed by somebody's, you know, son or daughter. And they took a design class in high school or in college. And, you know, they're kind of basic, you know, mm-hmm. But what we're really trying to do is get the brands to get to market faster. And a lot of times this design process just is iterative. It goes on and on and on. And then when it comes into a shop like ours, we put it through a prepress step to make sure that the file is compatible with our digital printing engines. And oftentimes there's some more back and forth that goes on there. So what we're trying to do is squeeze that down and really compress and get them into market faster. I think that's probably one of the bigger benefits to having an in-house design services team like we're planning on having.
Okay. When I was at MJ BizCon, some of the packaging companies that I spoke with that were offering sustainability options that maybe cost a little bit more said that right now the industry is full of a lot of lip service in terms of companies that want to say they're more sustainable but are not willing to spend a little bit more to be sustainable. Are you experiencing the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we have people come in, they want to talk about recycled, recyclable films. So we have that. They want to talk about post-consumer recycled films, which have perhaps up to 50% recycled plastic in them. So they're not fully. We have a lot of questions about compostable and biodegradable films. And honestly, you know, we've run all the tests. You know, I would tend to agree that certainly on the brand side, you know, I think that they're interested in it. They want to be able to check that box, but they don't want to do it at the expense of the packaging costing more. And nowadays, with everything costing more, it's just one more thing that they have to deal with, right? Because of the state of the economy right now.
So, do you guys kind of fit that in between? Because you're able to offer such an environmentally friendly process already that you're kind of a bridge to that next step.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think we're a viable alternative that will get you some real benefits from an environmental standpoint with the benefits of our manufacturing program, our platform rather, and with the benefits of being able to order to demand and avoid obsolescence and landfill.
How much of your business is coming from within the state of Colorado and how much business are you doing in the rest of the US when it comes to cannabis?
We do a lot of business in Colorado. We also do a lot of business in Canada. Mm-hmm. And virtually every state, especially those that are now ventured into the recreational type of cannabis. And of course, the growth in CBD. We're in all those states. And certainly, I think California and Colorado probably lead the way. But then you start taking a look at some of these other states like Massachusetts. I think New Jersey is going to be strong. You know, really all of them are great markets for flexible packaging because these brands do need to go to market with a professional look.
You had mentioned labeling and how diverse it is state to state. Do you guys take it on yourselves to figure out what you need in terms of labeling restrictions state to state, or is that on the operator to make sure they have everything correct when it's sent to you for printing?
Yeah, it's really on them. You know, we're not going to profess to be experts in every single change that's come down the pike on legislation regarding cannabis. Mm-hmm. But we do try to be aware of what the requirements are and work with the customer to make sure that they're aware of it when they send us their design.
Okay. Discussing the consolidation that you talked about earlier, how is that impacting EPAC and how is that impacting some of the operators and how they do business when it comes to using printing services?
Well, it's kind of all over the map. I mean, you know, ultimately what you expect to see is some of these smaller brands that get, you know, sucked up into a larger interstate operator, let's say. Initially, they're going to run by themselves, you know, then they'll look for economies of scale, you know, using one packaging supplier and things of that nature. I think that we have a unique position in the sense that we could handle both these small guys. You know, they're just coming up. They're a target for acquisition. They become a part of a consolidated multi-state operation. And now all of a sudden there are multiple businesses that now fall up into that. And so, you know, one would ask, you know, all right, there's a lot more packaging then coming from that aggregated company now. And there is. And so what we've done inside of EPAC is we have a capability we call EPAC One. And throughout the world, we have 24 processing centers and we have 60 HB Indigo digital presses. And all of those presses and all of our facilities are networked to act as one. So if we have an extremely long run from a consolidated group of cannabis companies, and now all of a sudden, instead of ordering 50,000, they're ordering 5 million, we have the capacity to be able to handle all that.
Okay. Because our listeners sort of range from the smaller mom and pops all the way to the larger MSOs, could you give us an idea of, you know, what is the smallest run that you've seen specific to cannabis, and what's the largest run of packaging that you guys have done?
Well, boy, for cannabis, I couldn't tell you what the largest is, but large. We start off with a small, medium-sized business. We know they're on a tight budget, and so we have a minimum of $2,500 for, you know, which is pretty reasonable. And so they'll get however many packages, pouches that they'll get for that $2,500. But we have runs of multiple hundreds of thousands coming to us from the cannabis industry, and it's spread out really across the country. You know, and we have some activity going on in Switzerland now. There's some interest in actually opening up Switzerland, and we'll be speaking at a conference there in a couple of months.
What's the activity in Switzerland in terms of opening up? Do you mean like opening a plant over there?
No, well, we are opening a plant. That's not the reason. It's in Innsbruck. It'll be open in a couple of months, I guess. It'll serve the DACH region there. But Switzerland is really the only country that I'm aware of in Europe that is having active conversations around legalization. And if it's legal, then what does the legislation look like to be able to control it? And it's quite far down the debate stage, if not the legislation that's needed to be able to put those regulations in place. So not there yet, but I'm pretty confident that they're going to do something there.
Okay. When you talked about all of the machines at every plant being networked, so if you guys receive a large order with a quick turn, it might be coming from multiple locations to fill that order?
It could be. It could be. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, when you've been out in the industry, what are some of the critical issues that operators are coming to you with hoping to solve?
I think it falls into our value proposition. I think we've honed our value proposition to meet the needs and demands that we see from the cannabis industry. I think the big one, as I mentioned right up front, was certified child-resistant packaging, both resealable and non-resealable. It was the need to communicate certain things on a package that we can use our connected packaging tool for. There was a need, and still is a need, as companies move from drams to flexible packaging, to have enhanced graphics, which digital printing is the brightest, most graphically rich type of printing you can use for something like that. I think the requirements that we hear are around change. You know, an active legislature around cannabis is going to pretty much a couple times a year, several, maybe more times a year, is going to want you to change this language, change this wording, put this certification thing here. And so they're constantly in a state of flux. And when with digital printing, where you can only order what you need, you minimize what you throw away, and then come to us for, you know, quick turnaround and do it on as many SKUs as you want to. It just seems to click, to check all the boxes that we hear from the cannabis industry.
What are some of the different demands? Like, you obviously worked with child-resistant packaging before, but what are some of the demands that you get in the cannabis industry that are different from other markets that you're in? Or when it comes to printing, is pretty much everything the same?
It's kind of the same, Dave, yeah. To be honest with you. Yeah, I wish I could give you a sharper answer, but at the end of the day, it's a pouch. It has to have certain barrier properties because they're mm-hmm. concerned about water vapor emissions. They're concerned about freshness of the product. So water vapor and oxygen transmissibility through the film. I mean, all those things are super important with cannabis just because of the nature of the product.
What is product development like at EPAC when it comes to emerging new types of packaging?
We have an R&D group. So we have people that are schooled in the chemistry and chemical engineering, and typically have focused their career on polymers. And they come in and we assess the polymers. We put it through testing that involves the printing process to make sure that the inks adhere properly. We'll then run it through the lamination process to make sure that that the film and the ink all laminates properly and doesn't delaminate. There's nothing inherent in the chemistry that's causing it to delaminate. We'll then put it through the pouching process, and really, you know, the same thing there. It's making sure that the quality's there, that we can pouch the material as good as we can, a standard run-of-the-mill, you know, material, so the pouch looks good, stands up good, doesn't excessively wrinkle, the zipper tears straight, and more importantly, maybe that it doesn't leak. Mm. And so we're paying attention, whether it be, you know, a high barrier substrate for any product, obviously cannabis being one, or it's some other demand that is thrown at us. Our R&D team does a great job, and an awful lot of what they've done since we've started EPAC really is around cannabis structures.
Does EPAC do filling also, or just strictly printing?
Printing, laminating, and we create the finished pouch.
Okay.
That would then go to a co-manufacturer ostensibly, and they would either do vertical or horizontal form fill seal. You know, a lot of the smaller brands do it by hand.
Yeah.
You know, we just send them, you know, a couple boxes of, you know, 10,000 bags, and somebody sits around and stuffs them, you know, so.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of customers coming to you after they've tried bringing their own labeling packaging in-house and just have kind of failed to get it off the ground?
We see some. I think it's not so much maybe that the product failed as much as it's they're trying to scale their business. They're trying to grow their business, and they quickly come to the realization that if they had a great looking pouch that could protect the product effectively, that there's a marketing billboard for you. You know, and you're just not going to get it with a blank sack with a sticker on it, and you're not going to get it with a dram. You know, so
for the people who don't know what a dram is, could you describe that to us?
Well, I'm no expert on it, but I assume it's those little cylindrical things. They right. stand about 3 inches high. They're about maybe 2 inches wide. And you squeeze them, and the top pops off. So they're plain out of plastic.
How would you describe your place in the industry when it comes to cannabis packaging?
I would say that if we're not the industry leader, we're very close.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you first came into the industry, what were some of the things that surprised you?
Well, I remember one of the days before we opened Boulder where one of my partners and I were walking through one of these grow houses. It was my first time doing it, you know, and I see these football fields of tall plants and the lighting and the irrigation and the, I mean, it was astounding, you know, the scope of some of these operations, you know. You know, and it was difficult to understand, you know, who the manufacturers were, who the retailers were. There was a lot of vertical integration going on, still is. Who was our customer going to be, you know? Was it going to be the retailer? Well, it could be if they're connected with a grow house, if it's the same owner, you know? And so figuring out that was a little bit of a challenge in the beginning.
Did you have any preconceived notions about the cannabis industry before you got into it, and have those changed since?
I saw it as a really strong growth industry. I mean, I think, you know, for all the reasons that you read about, you know, the only thing that was going to stop it, in my opinion, was legislation.
Right.
And it looked as though those barriers were being knocked down. So I was pretty confident looking at market growth and seeing the number of states that were entertaining legislation to legalize recreational. And that still goes on today. I was pretty confident that we would have a strong market here.
Since it's not federally legal, is the company still careful in terms of promoting itself in the cannabis industry?
Yes, we're very careful about it. Yeah, there are certain things you just really don't want to do. I mean, we see other companies, you know, doing, having websites that are pretty in your face about it. Mm-hmm. And we know for a fact that Google does not take a kind look at that. And so if you go on our website, you won't see many references to cannabis. And we try to make sure that we stay on the right side of the Google laws, some of the social media laws and that kind of stuff. So as a result, our digital marketing of it is really quite limited.
Okay. Does most of your business then come via word of mouth or repeat business?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We go to there's a ton of cannabis CBD trade shows, right? I mean, you know, you can go to one every day, I think, you know, and we go, you know, because we have sales people that are spread throughout the country, we'll attend, you know, many of those trade shows, and we pick up an awful lot of leads that way.
One thing that I've noticed about the industry, and we've worked in other industries, in other publishing houses, is that it seems like a very collaborative industry. When it comes to packaging, are you getting a lot of referral business as a result of, you know, hey, you know, you should check out EPAC because they've helped us out with this?
We do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one thing I was kind of curious about, and I'm not sure if you saw the story about how Nestle recently launched a pilot with refillable packaging. I don't know if you saw that story at all.
I saw the story. Yeah.
Okay.
I just
wanted to pick your brain a little bit about what your thoughts are on the actual feasibility of refillable packaging, and, you know, whether or not, well, I'll just start there. What's your thought on refillable packaging?
I there's a lot of obstacles to it. From a hygiene, you know, ensuring that the packages stay clean or get clean, to the process of returning the package to wherever it is it's going to be reused. Mm-hmm. I just see a lot of, I mean, then the logistics side of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I haven't given it a great deal of thought, but I would think that there's a lot of obstacles.
Okay. You know, in the events, and it seems like anytime we talk about federal legalization, it seems like it moves a little bit further away. What are your expectations for federal legalization, and how would that stand to change EPAC's business?
Well, we know what you know, nationalizing it did for Canada, right? It's now it's one market. It's very easy to operate in versus here. I don't know. We got 25 markets or whatever it is now, and they're all a little bit different. So it just makes doing business that much easier. And because it's federally legal, you know, in Canada and hopefully soon in the United States, you just see more players getting into it, right? It's just, you know, it's a gold rush, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think for us, the market would just keep growing if it's federally approved, because it does away with that stigma of a class one drug, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll allow new entrants into the market, and I suspect it'll just keep growing.
Having come from some established marketplaces from a packaging perspective, you know, food, and then coming into cannabis, was it frustrating operating in a market that kind of seemed to be working almost backwards?
Actually, it was fun.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say. I mean, there were a lot of companies coming to us saying, how do I do this? You know, help me figure this out. I don't really know what I need. What's packaging? How do I determine what the right packaging is? It was fun. I mean, we were creating EPAC at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to dial in recipes for customers that they actually needed and wanted. And we learned about the industry like that. It was a fun time to be at EPAC during those days.
Is it still fun?
It's crazy. You know, I mean, we've taken a company that we started in 2016, and today we're almost 800 employees. We've got 24 manufacturing plants around the world. We probably have over 5,000 total customers. So to see that happen in 7 years has been pretty fun.
Tell me a little bit about the origin story. How did you guys decide to start EPAC?
Well, my background is in marketing and digital printing for companies like Xerox, and you know, Ricoh is another one. And so I had a strong background in digital printing because I was always involved with those leading edge technologies that were coming out. I actually was going to retire at the end of 2012. And at the beginning of my quote unquote retirement, I met a couple of guys that were involved in the packaging space. One of them is Jack Knott, you know, our CEO, and another one is Virag Patel, who is our CEO. And as we started to talk about this idea of what could be done with digital printing and packaging, those two guys who became my partners, you know, we shared the vision. We conducted some market research. I'm affiliated with Cal Poly. We did some market research in conjunction with Cal Poly and what is now PMMI Media Group, but it was Summit Media at that time, right? Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of primary research to kind of test this notion that digital printing would be something that the market would be interested in, attuned to, right? So the primary research really kind of gave our premise a lot of credibility. And once this HB Indigo press came out, we were quick to act to secure one and start a greenfield company. We had no customers. April 2016, we hoped that the phone would ring. Mm. And you know, we built a sales force, built a website, spread the word through the industry with the people that I knew and my partners knew. And it took off pretty quickly, actually.
So, yeah, from April 2016 to now, you said, what, 800 employees, plants around the world. How were you able to scale and ramp up so quickly, kind of without falling into some of those traditional pitfalls that people do as they try to grow their business?
Well, I mean, first of all, our CEO is a veteran of over 30 years of being a CEO for flexible packaging companies, and he's grown them throughout his career. So he understands what it takes to scale. Okay. And he's got a sixth sense about it, you know, almost. The other thing was the IT. We do a lot of our own IT work. So, for example, if you are talking an e-commerce portal with something called web to print, which essentially just speeds the artwork from submission all the way through the print process. What we've been doing is working on aspects of that that are proprietary, that will give us our own front end to order processing that's very, very simplified and easy for a layman to actually operate. And all of our systems, really, from our accounting system, our ERP system, all of it has an element of customization and being proprietary in nature, because when we created EPAC, we were different. You know, nobody had gone into the flexible packaging space with digital printing before, and nobody was able to offer the kind of value proposition that we could offer. So we, I think we kind of always had the idea. In fact, Jack, our CEO, remember one of the early days of EPAC where we had just gotten our Madison, Wisconsin plant up and running. Maybe it was running for a couple of months, and we were at a meeting there. And he says, you know, I think we can have 15 more of these plants by the end of the year. I looked at him and I said, you're kidding me, you know, 15, the end of the year, you know? Well, I was a little bit of a doubting Thomas at that, but lo and behold, we just about made it. Oh, and wow. And now we've exceeded it, you know? So, but certainly having an IT backbone, IT systems, is critical. And we just felt like we were different enough that we really couldn't rely on off-the-shelf software.
How did you start in Madison?
Jack was familiar with it. He actually was from Madison. I had actually spent about 2 months before we found the Madison, Wisconsin property looking in Chicago. Because coming from my corporate background, you know, I was thinking, got to be near an airport and, you know, and all this. And I honestly couldn't find a property that would work for us in Chicago, because we had very specific requirements. You had to have an environmentally, not environmentally, but a room that you can control temperature, you control humidity, because it affects the printing process. We needed a lot of electricity. You know, we wanted a free flowing floor. We didn't want a lot of columns in the way. So long story short, I couldn't find what I was looking for in Chicago. Seems hard to believe, right? But everything I looked at was old and kind of, so I went up to Madison, and, you know, on the last day of a trip to look for real estate. And, I drove up in the morning, and by 11 o'clock, I had two properties that were great. Oh, wow. And it was just a very, very much just a different market. Things were newer. People seemed more willing to want to work with us. Now, since then, we are in Chicago. Okay. So, but that's how we ended up in Madison to be the first plant.
Okay. Is there anything that digital printing can't do right now that you foresee it being able to accomplish in the near future?
Not really. Okay. You know, and I've been around digital printing for probably 30 plus years, you know, and I've seen it evolve. And eventually it just keeps taking share from the traditional processes, whether it be offset printing in the commercial print shops, or, you know, or it's in implant print centers, or it's Flexo or Roto in the packaging space. The digital devices, as they evolve and they get faster or wider, smarter digital front ends, just seem to be able to chip away at that volume that is still probably too high for most people to think that it would be good for digital printing. What we're trying to do is dispel that rumor with EPAC One, to say, hey, we've got 60 printers. We'll just, you know, we can do the jobs just as easily as anybody else can do it. Maybe even faster in some cases, you know? And so there is that stigma of, you know, digital being slow and expensive, where we're trying to bust that myth and say, well, it's not slow if you have 60 presses running simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to create a business model, a pricing model around our business, where, quite frankly, we can be competitive even at the highest, maybe not the highest, but very high run lengths.
Well, before we get out of here, I wanted to give our audience an idea of how to get started. So if anybody, any of the cannabis operators out there that are listening now, if they want to get started or switch solutions when it comes to packaging, where do they start?
Well, you can obviously come to our website, fill out a request for quote or request for information form. Right now, we're beginning to roll out our online order entry process. So it's a very small percentage of our users that visit our website right now go to that page, but we'll be increasing that. So there's a couple of ways. I mean, you can go on the site, you can fill out a contact me form. We'll call you. Possibly even enter an order, in these early stages of our order entry process. Or you can go on our website and find a location near you and call the 800 number and we'll take care of you.
Do you want operators to be at a certain point, like have a label ready to roll? Or if they're sort of still in the, I guess, fact finding, I don't want to say fact finding, but maybe they don't necessarily have a label ready to roll. Do they still reach out to you, or is that something where a few things still need to be worked out?
You mean if they're currently using labels?
Well, using labels, or maybe the exact label design isn't ready to roll yet.
I think they contact us. We work with in short of us actually implementing our own graphic design services capability, we do work with designers around the country. Okay. And if they've been vetted so that they know how to construct a file for digital printing. And, honestly, it's pretty smooth. It's pretty easy. You just call us and we'll put you in touch with a trusted designer.
There's been a lot of talk about these AI generators when it comes to art. Do you see them playing a role in creating labeling or graphic design?
How do you not see it? It's amazing what it does now, I mean, I don't have any specifics, but how do you not see this thing evolving into, just kind of tell it what you're looking for and let it go figure it out,
Right.
The AI technology can go out and find images and combine images just as easily as it can words, mm-hmm. right? So I would think it's going to be a reality one day.
Very good. Well, Carl, before we get out of here, is there anything else that we might have left out or anything in particular that you want to make sure the Cannabis Equipment News audience knows about yourself or EPEC?
No, other than we're here to serve. We take the cannabis industry very seriously. It's been a great symbiotic relationship both for us and all of our customers. Wish I could tell you how many cannabis customers we have, but it's a lot. And, I would say just, give me a call. You can find me on LinkedIn, or just call one of our 800 numbers and I think you can get in touch with us.
Excellent. Well, Carl, thank you very much for joining me today. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, before we get out of here again, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You can help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. Also, make sure to subscribe to our daily newsletter so you get it delivered to your inbox first. All right. For Carl Joachim, Chief Marketing Officer with EPAC, I'm David Manti. This is the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.